You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
A new oversight panel for the recently launched International Science Council for COVID-19 Scenarios project has been announced. The panel will report on possible COVID-19 scenarios and choices for governments, agencies, and citizens. I interviewed Sir Peter Gluckman, the President-elect of the International Science Council, about the panel and the importance of international collaboration. We started by discussing the purpose of the panel and who is involved.
I'm President-elect of the International Science Council and chair of its Science Committee. And in that role, we've been considering what we can do to usefully contribute to discussions on COVID. And late last year, round about the time when the vaccines first emerged, it became clear that there was a need to have a sensible and proper discussion about what will happen into the future. The vaccines don't alone solve the problem, and indeed it will take several years for the world to be fully vaccinated. And that, even that's dependent on how different societies and cultures accept vaccination. And therefore, after discussions with WHO, the chief scientist of the World Health Organization, and with the chief executive of the United Nations Disaster Risk Reduction Organization, our role as the global voice of science and independent of governments was considered to be valuable. And having a frank assessment of the pathways ahead over the next 2, 3, maybe longer years, and what decisions being made now by different governments will do that will lead more likely to lead to a better outcome or a lesser outcome. And we pulled together experts, not just from virology and epidemiology, but across a broad range of domains that need to be considered if we're to make a useful contribution. So we have, for example, on the traditional virology epidemiology side, we have Professor Salim Abdul Kalim, who is one of the lead, if not the leading person in Africa, certainly in South Africa, with global responsibilities around the pandemic. We have Eric Gooseby, who is on President Biden's COVID panel and worked very hard as head of the pandemic preparedness system for President Obama. And he's on there because although Tony Fauci originally agreed to be involved, White House rules meant that he could not be involved at the level we wanted. We have Professor Peter Piot, who is the principal advisor President van der Leyen of the European Commission on COVID, and who was formerly head of the UN AIDS body. And we have other epidemiologists involved, including, of course, Sir David Skegg from Dunedin. And then we have economists such as Professor Craig Colquhoun, who was head of the London School of Economics. We have Ismail Serageldin, who was deputy governor of the World Bank for developmental aspects. We have some people from less developed countries like Professor Aminata Saldiallo, who's expert on viral diseases and comes from Senegal, and Professor Singh from Nepal, who's an expert also on viral diseases. We have Professor Sir David Spiegelhalter, probably the world's leading expert on risk. We have a famous bioethicist in Christiane Wuppen from Germany, a famous modeler, Professor Struckener from Brazil, Professor Lucia Reich, who's a political scientist and decision theorist from Denmark, Mr. Shaw Pham Lee from the Center for Strategic Studies in Singapore. And we have a very distinguished social scientist and Professor Elizabeth Jellin from Argentina, and Professor George Gao, who is the head of the Chinese Center for Disease Control, and Professor Jeffrey Bolton, who's my deputy at the International Science Council. So an extraordinarily talented senior group of people from the social, economic, political, and biological sciences.
You've mentioned being able to discuss without the limitations of politics. Has international politics limited the amount of international cooperation we've been able to have?
Absolutely. I mean, you only have to stand back to the beginning of the pandemic and see the geopolitical tensions between the two superpowers of the world, which clearly delayed understanding the origin of the disease. We've seen the delays at WHO over declaring the pandemic, the very confused decisions that were made in some countries, not New Zealand, about border closure or not border closure. You've seen that domestic politics has played into virtually every country's decisions as to how they, to the strategy they chose, whether it was, so say, to suppress the virus or to eliminate the virus, how they played off hard lockdowns like we're currently in Auckland, or relatively hard lockdowns. These are much more laissez-faire approaches, as we've seen in much of the Northern Hemisphere, in the Western, not in the Eastern Hemisphere, but certainly the Western Hemisphere. All of this is a matter where science and politics come together. And yes, politicians love saying we follow the science, but they also follow the politics at the same time.
And can you speak on what you will bring to the panel, what your specific expertise are and what your role will be?
Well, I guess my role is almost as co-chair, in the sense that I'm chair of the president-elect of the International Science Council. But, you know, my role is one of systems analysis. I understand how science and policy interface and how decisions in one area, knowledge in one area, interact with the other. And that's what we're facing.
And we've seen vaccines recently being administered in New Zealand and the world. What more needs to be done before we
return? Well, most countries do not have vaccine act. Relatively few countries are the only countries with large amounts of vaccine availability. At the current estimates, it's thought it will be 2024 before there's enough vaccine to vaccinate the whole world. And if you just think in terms of countries in different states, and let's just think in terms of four classes of country, it's oversimplifying it. We've got countries like New Zealand, which are advanced countries with good economic resources and which have effectively no virus in the population, hopefully. We have countries like Great Britain, which are wealthy countries, advanced countries, and they have lots of virus. We have countries like Vietnam, which are not wealthy, but have very low viral levels like New Zealand. And we have countries which are poor, like or lower middle income countries, like South Africa and Brazil and so forth, which have very large viral loads. Now, at some point in the future, all of that is going to converge to the point where we accept and can manage the virus in the way we would manage influenza. That is, we live with it, we hopefully most people get immunized against it, and we accept that there will be cases where there are consequences from not being immunized or where the virus escapes immunization. That may be 2 years away, that might be 5 years away, but it's inevitable at some point that the world converges into some form of equilibrium. If it doesn't, we will continue to have constraints on travel and difficult arrangements in place beyond just perhaps a vaccine passport, which will make life continue to be very difficult for many people.
So will one of the focuses of the panel be on equitable vaccine distribution?
I think that's right at the top of the list, actually, because I think the decisions that are made over who gets vaccine and in what order in different contexts are hard decisions where, again, rationality and politics will play out and interface with each other.
And given the surgence of new, more complex variants, will the virus ever be globally eradicated?
It will never be totally eradicated because it's not only in humans. So even if we could vaccinate every human and eradicate it, then there's only really been one disease that's been absolutely eradicated, and that's smallpox. close on polio, but not absolute. This is not like that because it also exists in animals, and therefore it can, as we saw in Denmark with the minks, and probably in the origin of the virus, and we know that cats in particular are susceptible to carry the virus. It's inconceivable that it will be that we'll get to the point that it was like smallpox, gone from our memory. Hopefully, we can get to the point where it's like influenza, where we can manage it without taking precautions beyond regular vaccination.
And just lastly, could you comment on how citizens and their behaviour can impact the progress of a COVID-19 and also could lead to the possibility of future lockdowns?
Well, you know, vaccines are only part of the story. The other part of the story is our behaviour as individuals, our responsibilities as individuals, hygiene, masking, social distancing when there is pandemics around, when there is virus around. At the moment, until vaccine levels are high, that is a critical component of it. And in a country like New Zealand, which has a minimal viral load, contact tracing is critically important because we need to be able to stamp it out while the numbers are very low. Otherwise, we risk it compounding rather rapidly, particularly with variants like the South African and the UK variants. So it's inevitable. I'm equally concerned about the other side of the coin, namely the misinformation, people that are promoting vaccine denial, vaccine hesitancy, for whatever reason they're doing it. We've seen, if you read the Herald Today episode, where the Council for Auckland Council for South Auckland is being hit upon because he promotes vaccines in what is the most vulnerable part of the New Zealand population. So, I mean, the issues ahead, and there are countries like France where vaccine hesitancy and vaccine denial, or Japan, is very high for historical and cultural reasons. And from the point of view of global protection and therefore protection for New Zealand in the long run, we need to make sure that we do our bit to minimise the enormous harm and delays that will be caused by vaccine hesitancy. I mean, as the vaccine comes into New Zealand, we need to encourage the most vulnerable to get vaccinated quickly. From all that's been done, and particularly in the data sets that are now available from countries like Israel, the safety of this crop of vaccines is very clear. There will be new vaccines. There's over 100 new vaccines still in development. I would like to see more rapid testing done in many countries because that's a good way to get on top of things. And we need to solve the problem in New Zealand of inadequate contact tracing. But all of this is part of a global as well as domestic effort.
That was Sir Peter Gluckman, the President-elect of the International Science Council.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/becasts.